When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, hello, welcome to Let's Talk About Myths, baby. This is the podcast where I tell you stuff about stuff, and that stuff is mythological. Thanks for your patience on this episode that is a day late. I wish I had a good excuse or some fancy reason, but honestly, I put this off until the last minute because, frankly, that's just what I do. And then Monday got away from me, and by the time I had a chance to sit down and write this episode, it was like 5 p.m. and I had to write minimum 4,000 words and then record it, and, well, that just wasn't going to happen, because I also love having at least a decent portion of the evening to be a lazy butt and make myself a nice dinner. But anyway, I'm here now, and we're talking about those wonderful people, those ancient Greeks, with the amazing names and the impressive skills. And those Greek gods and goddesses with the amazing names and the kind of gross and troubling skills. We're back this week digging deeper and deeper into that infamous old war. The Trojan one, you know it. There's a part about a horse coming. Where we last left off, it was decided that Hector and Ajax were going to fight. But then they were so evenly matched that some dude told them to just shake hands and be friends because clearly they were both so well loved by the gods. So they did this. They chilled out for a bit. But meanwhile, Poseidon was pissed because of a wall, even though that's the stupidest fucking hill to die on. This is episode 34, The Iliad, part 7, Return of Achilles, sort of. In case you thought that this story didn't have enough Zeus in it so far, fear not. We open this next chapter in the Trojan War with Zeus pulling together a council of the gods up on Mount Olympus. He sits everyone down and he tells them that they are not to fuck with the Trojans, not under any circumstances. He tells the gods and the goddesses assembled that he wants this shit over with. It's taking too long, and if any of them fuck with either side, then it's obviously going to take even longer to wrap this nonsense up. Then he goes on an epic rant about how he's Zeus and he's the best and everyone else is the worst, and he just goes on and on flattering himself, even though, as we all know, Zeus is certainly not the best Greek god. Not by far. Then, after capitulating to Athena a bit, because that's just what Zeus does when it comes to Athena, he heads on his merry way. He takes his fancy King of the Gods chariot, and he rides up to the top of Mount Ida, which overlooks the battleground. There he settles in with a big bag of popcorn to watch the goings-on down on Earth between the Greeks and the Trojans. Can't you just picture him crunching away on his popcorn, pieces stuck in his beard, as he stares at the bloodshed taking place just below? Now, down below, the two sides are dealing with a slight bit of downtime from the last incident between Hector and Ajax. The two sides eat a nice meal, separately of course, and then they prepare to fight yet again. There's blood and there's guts and violence and death, and Zeus watches, popcorn in hand, his fingers getting all greasy and salty. Finally, neither side is gaining any ground, and so Zeus decides he's going to weigh the fates of either side. He holds up a scale, he places the doom of the Greeks and the doom of the Trojans, one on either side of the scale, and he watches. It's the Greek side that sinks towards the earth. And so just like that, Zeus fires thunder and lightning onto the Greek side of the battle, and the tides turn against them, big time. Lightning is raining down around the Greeks, and they begin to pull back. It's a bit of an understatement, actually. Really, it's almost all of them are straight up running away in fear. It's not looking good for them Greeks. Only a few of the men are left on the battlefield. One is, of course, Diomedes, who's still being fucking crazy. And the other is Nestor. Though Nestor is only there because his horses have been wounded by an arrow sent by Paris. Things aren't going well for Nestor, and Diomedes basically just tells him that he's too fucking old, which seems a little mean because Nestor tends to be one of the most level-headed and generally good dudes on the side of the Greeks. Nestor and Diomedes keep going against the Trojans, even in the face of this not great situation for their side of the battle. But finally, Nestor sees reason, and he's all, "Look, dude, this isn't our day. Zeus is clearly calling for Hector to win today, so there's no point in fighting it. Maybe another day Zeus will call for us to win. Wouldn't that be nice?" Which, what a fucking shitty way to live. Like, yeah, I guess this all-powerful being just wants me dead today. Better head back to bed and wait for him to change his mind and decide I should be alive. In response to this, Diomedes voices his concern that if he backs off, then he'll basically be fodder for Hector to brag about how he scared off old Diomedes, because his ego and his reputation is his only concern. Again, with the toxic masculinity. But of course, once more, Nestor is the one who sees sense, and he tells Diomedes that that won't happen, essentially crediting everyone Diomedes killed and all the children he's left fatherless as proof that no one is scaring off Diomedes except Zeus himself. Seriously, what a good guy Diomedes is. Hector goes after the Greeks, though specifically Diomedes and Nestor, who are still in the line of fire. He plans to fight them all the way back to the Greek ships on the beach and force them to leave the shores of Troy right this very moment. But of course, this causes Hera to get annoyed because she's watching it all just as intently as Zeus. So she decides to take it into her own hands. "My windows are open because it's really hot, and I'm sorry at the noise that's coming in." She goes to Agamemnon and inspires him to inspire his troops. I love this idea that people in Greece did little to nothing good without the influence of the gods. He couldn't possibly have inspired his troops on his own. He needed Hera's help. So, you know, score one single point for women, even if it's a woman doing this to help a whole slew of men. But whatever, the point stands. Hera inspires Agamemnon to inspire. Agamemnon gives one of his oh-so-rousing speeches before offering a prayer to Zeus to help the Greeks and show that they won't be utterly and completely destroyed on this very beach. In response to this prayer, Zeus shows that, for once, he's actually listening, and he sends a sign to show Agamemnon that he's been heard. He sends an eagle, which is always a symbol of Zeus, and that eagle is holding a fawn in its talons, which is just straight up mean, but whatever, the Greeks didn't seem to care much about the lives of cute baby animals. Vegans, they were not. The Greeks see this sign, and they are filled with a new sense of urgency and bravery. All it takes is a massive bird holding a helpless baby deer in its razor-sharp talons, then everyone's all gung-ho. The newly reawakened Greeks ride out against the Trojans. Diomedes, of course, is in the lead because he's always got to show off and be a jerk. Homer tells us that he's followed by and what is an extensive list of the Greeks, and then he shares why each of those Greeks were important. Homer was nothing if not repetitive. What follows this is basically just another list of people, this time those that are being killed, by a guy with a bow who's working with Ajax to, well, shoot people dead with his bow. But there's always a lot of backstory and family history on the people killed, as if giving everyone an epic personal history makes them more sympathetic. Which is an important plot device when you're not talking about hundreds of names of ancient Greek dudes. There's just too many names and pointless details, Homer. Seriously, get an editor. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't sometimes follow up this criticism of Homer with a bit of an explanation as to why these details are included. From my understanding, it's another of those things that was likely edited and added to over time. People wanted to know that their ancestors were involved in the war somehow, or they wanted to link famous mythological characters to other famous mythological characters, or they wanted to link regions in Greece or Asia Minor or wherever also to the battle. Basically, there were reasons for Homer's extensive and exhaustive lists of people, but frankly, they're not great reasons, and the lists are just so over the top. Long story short, this archer, Teucer, who's shooting the arrows at everyone, is actually aiming at Hector. There's a suspenseful moment where he doesn't hit Hector, but he hits another Trojan whose backstory we get before he goes back to aiming at the important one, Hector. But before Teucer can get loose another shot at Hector, Hector gets super pissed about the other Trojans this dude has just killed in the process, and he rushes at him, holding a massive rock in his hands, and he slams it down on the Greek where the collarbone meets the chest and brings this man down in one fell swoop. Ajax notices immediately, and they quickly get the incredibly, probably deathly injured Teucer off the battlefield and back to the Greek tents. I was probably pronouncing his name wrong. It's a C, and it's unclear if it's a soft or a hard C. I don't care. I'm sorry. This section of the Iliad is basically just a series of events that constantly switch the tide of the battle between the two sides. As soon as the Trojans seem like they're winning, Zeus sends an eagle with a cute baby deer it's going to kill, and then the Greeks seem like they're winning. And then Hector kills a dude who's close with the important dude, Ajax, and then the Trojans seem like they're winning again. Seriously, no one is gaining any ground, and it's just non-stop madness. War. Am I right? But of course, none of this can happen without some god or another realizing that they have a stake in whichever side winning. So now it's Athena and Hera who are looking at Hector as he decimates the Greeks once again, and they ask themselves, is there nothing they can do to help their precious, precious Greeks? Between them, they decide that they will help the Greeks. But then, of course, Zeus sees this, and then he sends a messenger to ask them what the hell they think they're doing. And so Athena and Hera decide, well, maybe they won't help the Greeks. And no one has gotten anywhere, and nothing has changed, and yet pages of the Iliad have gone by. The gods are still poking their nose into both sides of the business, and Hera and Athena are trying to convince Zeus that the Greeks need their help. But Zeus is pissed that they've yet again done the opposite of what he's asked them to do, and he doesn't hold back. He tells them both that Hector will not stop attacking and destroying the Greeks until he's reached their ship, which will finally force Achilles to come out and fight. That's right. Achilles is finally back in the mix. That guy, am I right? And so night falls on this bloody, epic battle yet again. The Trojans are disappointed. They will have to stop killing for a little bit. The Greeks are thrilled. They will get to stop dying for a little bit. Hector takes this opportunity to give a speech. He tells the Trojans, basically, that he's bummed they have to stop because it's gotten dark, but they'll start again in the morning. But he's confident. He speaks of how they'll finish off the Greeks and how the only ones who will get away and onto their ships will be wounded. They'll warn others off from seeking to wage war against the Trojans. He is sure they will win. He's certain. Hector calls for all the old and young men, those who aren't fighting with their Trojan brothers, for them to camp out on the walls of the city so that they may watch as their people are victorious. And that all the women in the walls of the city of Troy light a fire and keep a vigil to prevent any Greeks from slipping past the walls. That's important. He wants to make sure no Greeks get into the walls of the city of Troy.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then Fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Meanwhile, at the Greek camp, the speech Agamemnon is giving to the Greeks is going quite differently. Agamemnon appears before the assembled Greeks, whoever is left alive, in tears. He tells them that the war is a failure, that although Zeus once promised him that he would be successful in his battle against the Trojans, he has since gone back on his word. He tells the Greeks that it's clear that Zeus wants them to leave, to return in disgrace to their Greek homelands. But not everyone is happy with this interpretation of recent events. Shocker of shockers, it's Diomedes that stands up to Agamemnon and says, essentially, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He calls out Agamemnon for assuming that all the Greeks are cowards who would want to run home just because they're being totally ruined and Zeus has thrown lightning bolts at them and basically all seems fucking lost. He says that he'll stay behind, even if it's just him and his pal, who I think is the guy whose name I've never tried to pronounce, so why should I start now? Though it's not clear that this friend of Diomedes actually volunteers himself to be one of the ones who is to stay behind to fight all the remaining Trojans, but Diomedes seems certain that he'll stay. But to Agamemnon's surprise, all the Greeks yell and cheer at Diomedes' suggestion. They're not ready to give up either. Of course, to every risky suggestion by Diomedes comes a measured and reasonable one from Nestor. And so in response to Diomedes' proposal that they stay and continue to fight, Nestor makes the very, very valid point that maybe, just maybe, it's time for Agamemnon to go apologize to Achilles for taking away Briseis, oh, so long ago. Achilles, a guy they call the best of the Greeks, who has just been sitting in his tent, twiddling his goddamn thumbs all this time, just because Agamemnon is a little dink who refuses to accept that he's wrong and needs to apologize. Oh, how things might have gone if Agamemnon hadn't pissed off a demigod in the first place. Agamemnon knows that this is the only solution, and he quickly agrees with Nestor, conceding that he shouldn't have pissed off Achilles in the first place, that he was angry and jealous and just looking to cause trouble. He then proceeds to list every fucking thing he plans to give Achilles as an apology, which is basically everything you could ever possibly imagine. It is a long list. A crazy long list. Tripods, gold, horses, cauldrons, women. So many women. You know, as you do, giving away humans you kidnapped and raped as if they're nothing more than a trinket you've been collecting but are willing to part with. Ah, to be a woman back then. To cap it off, though, Agamemnon says that he will even return Briseis, whose kidnapping started this whole mess in the first place. And, bonus, Agamemnon tells everyone there, I didn't even rape her. What a good guy I am. Point being, Agamemnon is well and truly sorry, or he's just realized that he has to be this way in order for the Greeks to stand even a remotely fighting chance. So he plans to make hardcore amends to Achilles, the so-called best of the Greeks. A delegation is put together, one that will go to Achilles without Agamemnon and offer the apology and the gifts. Phoenix, Odysseus, and Ajax arrive, and they find Achilles in all his hotness, playing a lyre in his tent, just chilling, as if there weren't an epic, insane war raging all around him. With him is Patroclus. Oh, Patroclus. Those who have also read the Song of Achilles will feel the heartache here. These two, my heart. So anyway, the delegation goes to see Achilles and with him, Patroclus. And Achilles and Patroclus welcome them into the tent they share, because they're Achilles and Patroclus, and they offer the delegation stronger than normal wine. Things are going well so far. Finally, after they've all gotten comfortable, had some drinks, eaten some food, Odysseus sees his opportunity. He speaks up, announcing why they've come to see Achilles. He tells him everything that's happened, everything the gods have done, all the damage that's been caused, and all the damage that Hector threatens to do now. Then he tells Achilles how much they need him and why he should come to help the other Greeks. Then, of course, because it's Homer, he simply repeats the entire epic list of things that Agamemnon is willing to give Achilles in return for him coming back to fight. Achilles is quick to answer. He thanks Odysseus and is slightly sympathetic to their plight, and then he essentially upends that entirely, saying that he won't be going back to fight for Agamemnon because he still hates him and he's still mad. What he doesn't say is that he's being a selfish little bitch who's willing to watch everyone he knows die just because Agamemnon embarrassed him a bit ages ago. He talks about how he's the only one that had his prize taken away and that he loves her, this prize. He basically makes perfectly clear without actually admitting that, that he is indeed being a little bitch. He's mad and he just won't forgive Agamemnon, no matter what. He won't help the Greeks. He'll sail home with his Myrmidons, and that's that. But it's not Odysseus that speaks next in response to this from Achilles. Instead, it's Phoenix, who is part of the delegation, but was once closest to Achilles. He traveled with him to Troy from Phthia, and was with him long before the war even started. He trained Achilles, and to an extent practically raised him. In response to Achilles' selfish and straight-up depressing response to the Greeks' request for his help, Phoenix tells him the story of Meleager. Another day, soon, I will tell you the story of Meleager, but for now, know that it's a tale that is important to the moment at hand and what is being asked of Achilles. Ultimately, Phoenix is asking Achilles to look past the glory and his pride and instead to look at the humanity. His people need him. They'll die without him. Can't he get past his squabble with Agamemnon? Can't he accept the gifts that are being offered and help for the sake of helping? Phoenix tells Achilles that that alone should be glory enough. But Achilles disagrees. He tells Phoenix that that isn't enough. He's been disgraced by Agamemnon and he's not backing down. And anyway, he has glory enough by being the best of the Greeks and honored by the gods. He's being a giant dink, frankly. He tells Phoenix that he won't change his mind, but that Phoenix doesn't have to go the way of the Greeks. The rest of the delegation needs to leave, but he tells Phoenix that he should stay and sail off to Phthia with Achilles and Patroclus and the Myrmidons. A word I almost spelled as Myrmidongs, which I just think is fun. Truly, Achilles is just being a real asshole right now. He's lucky I've read the Song of Achilles and am 100% invested in his relationship with Patroclus and therefore can't find it in myself to truly hate him as a character. Poor Phoenix, though, is having a tough time with this. He wants to help the Greeks. He knows they'll die otherwise. He wants Achilles to help, because that is their only chance. But at the same time, he can't leave Achilles, and he can't have Achilles leave without him. He's known Achilles since he was a kid, and he has a whole story about how his own family is pretty horrendous, and so Achilles is his family. He needs to stay with him, even if it means abandoning the Greeks in their time of need. So Phoenix decides he will stay with Achilles and Patroclus, and Achilles sends the rest of the delegation back to the Greek camps, there to report to Agamemnon that he's not forgiven, and that Achilles will be providing no help to the Greeks. So you guys, how about those Greeks and those Trojans? Just endless back and forth nonsense and endless gods stepping in to try to fuck shit up, sometimes succeeding and sometimes not because another god is also trying to fuck shit up. They were petty motherfuckers, these primordial deities. What trouble they liked to cause. Stories like this are the most fascinating part about the ancient Greek religious tradition. I mean, could you imagine living in a world where you legitimately thought that the gods were so involved in the lives of your people that they would do anything to fuck you over? Even if it meant fucking over a specific person or a specific group? I mean, how would you live your life? You'd be constantly afraid you're going to piss someone off by stepping on a certain flower or killing a certain dude with a spear. I mean, it just seems like a really tough way to live. So much fear. Lucky most modern religions have dropped that fear aspect. Anyway, thanks all for listening and for reaching out lately. It's been a big week for you lovely people getting in touch. So again, I say a big thank you for all the messages you send. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all, and it makes me so, so happy. Also, once again, this episode was brought to you via the help of Emily Sanchez, who is lovely and is providing me with immensely helpful notes on the Iliad so I can get my shit together and figure out which nonsense I'm going to relay to you all in any given episode. Seriously, so much happens in the Iliad, but also there is so much useless nonsense. Just a string of names you'll never need again, or information that is just so, so unnecessary and would cause pointless confusion were I to explain it all to you. Having someone provide me with notes on the big, important stuff means it's just up to me to pick out otherwise entertaining useless shit and focus on the important plot points aside from those pointless bits that are just too good to pass up. So again, thank you, Emily. As usual, please go right ahead and follow me on any or all social media, as you do. I'm at MythsBaby everywhere. As I've mentioned, I'm also intending to start some kind of monthly newsletter. I'm still not 100% sure what it will include, though at this point, the consensus seems to be book recommendations, so expect those. Though I'm not entirely sure yet of the format of that. Either way, if you're interested in this forthcoming adventure, you can sign up on my website, mythsbaby.com. That's also where you can help me make this podcast or buy merch if you so choose. Now, before I sign off, I'll leave you with a point that Emily left me in her notes that helped me write today's episode, because I think it's particularly appropriate in this dramatic moment in the Trojan War. And that note is, totally ship Achilles and Patroclus. And to that I say, so do I, Emily, so do I. Guys, read A Song of Achilles if you haven't already, because Achilles and Patroclus have one of the fucking best love stories ever, okay? Thank you all again, you're all wonderful nerds, and I'm so glad I found you and you found me. I'm Liv, and I absolutely love this shit. I mean, can you tell?
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.